ॐ नमो भगवते वसुदेवाय अनुष्ठनम सहस्रेषु कृष्णिव्यथते शुधायै यततम अपिशुधनम कृष्णिम मम वेति तत्वतः. At many thousands amongst men, when they endeavor for perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Purport by our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. There are various grades of men, and out of many thousands, one may be sufficiently interested in transcendental realization to try to know what is the self, what is the body, and what is the absolute truth. Generally, mankind is simply engaged in the animal propensities, namely eating, sleeping, defending, and mating, and hardly anyone is interested in transcendental knowledge. The first six chapters of the Gita are meant for those who are interested in transcendental knowledge, understanding the self, the super self, and the process of realization by jnana yoga, jnana yoga, the discrimination of the self, and matter. However, Krishna can be known only by persons who are Krishna conscious. Other transcendentalists may achieve a personal Brahman realization, but this is easier than understanding Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Person, but at the same time, he is beyond the knowledge of Brahman and Paramatma. The yogis and jnanis are confused in their attempts to understand Krishna. Although the greatest of the impersonalists, Sripad Shankaracharya, has admitted in his Gita commentary that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his followers do not accept Krishna as such, for it is very difficult to know Krishna, even though one has transcendental realization of impersonal Brahman. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, the primeval Lord Govinda. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Nadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. It is very difficult for non-devotees to know him. Although non-devotees declare that the path of bhakti, of devotional service, is very easy, they cannot practice it. If the path of bhakti is so easy, as the non-devotee class of men complain, then why do they take up the difficult path? Actually, the path of bhakti is not easy. The so-called path of bhakti practiced by unauthorized persons without knowledge of bhakti may be easy, but when it is practiced factually according to the rules and regulations, the speculative scholars and philosophers are far away from the path. So this verse of Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, text number 3, wherein the Lord declares that out of many thousands of men, one may endeavor for perfection. And out of those few who are endeavoring for perfection, Krishna says, hardly one has understood him in truth. This verse was spoken, of course, at the end of the Pura Yuga, the last stage, just as the year goes through different seasons. We're just entering into spring now. Spring has sprung. Then there will be summer, then fall and autumn. In the same way, the material creation goes through different stages. Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. And they become successively worse. This is in contrast to the modern scientific theory that things go from worse to better. We're more evolved now than we were hundreds or thousands or what to speak of millions of years ago. Actually, Vedic science says no, it's the other way around. The beginning of creation, Satya Yuga, was the golden age. 99.999% of the population was very interested in liberation, in getting out of samsara, the repetition of birth and death. They took their spiritual vows very seriously. They kept things simple so they could become liberated. Their motto was simple living with high thinking. Nowadays life has become so complicated that we struggle to find a few hours to come to such a program as this.
although this is a very difficult matter.
The next age was Treta Yuga, it's called the Silver Age. The percentage of people interested in spiritual life dropped significantly, down to 75%. And as the next age evolved over billions of years, we came to Dwapara Yuga, the Copper Age, where only 50% of the population was interested, seriously interested in the goal of life, Krishna consciousness. And towards the end of that age, it had decreased most significantly, so that the Lord, who appeared at the end of the Dwapara Yuga, which was just a little over 5,000 years ago, that's when Bhagavan Sri Krishna appeared. He didn't appear at this age. He appeared at the tail end of the Dwapara Yuga. And he stated, he observed the situation, Yushinam sahasrisu kaschidyatate shidhaye. Out of thousands and millions of men, only a few are interested in the science of self-realization. What is this? And of those few, sadhus, rishis, yogis, he said, hardly one has understood me in truth, has realized Bhagavan, has realized God. Although that is the purpose of life. Lamentable situation. What would the Lord think now in Kali Yuga? The percentage has dropped in Kali Yuga to 25% of the population is serious about Krishna consciousness. And my experience is that is deteriorating very rapidly. Kali Yuga began when the lotus feet of the Lord left this planet. His mission was accomplished. Pariktanaya sadhanam vinashaya tatushkritam. He'd come to deliver his devotees 5,000 years ago. He'd come to annihilate the miscreants like Kamsa and Shishupal and Dantavarkya and Jarashanda, etc. He'd come to reestablish the principles of religion, dharma, Sanatana dharma. And as soon as his mission was accomplished, he left. He doesn't waste time. His devotees are waiting for him in the spiritual sky. So as soon as his lotus feet just lifted off this earth planet, just 1 inch above the earth, the darkness of ignorance began to set in. Just like when the sun descends on the horizon, it may be very, very bright. And then the sun starts to descend over the horizon in the evening. It's very beautiful. Everyone wants to go and see the sun set. But after it's set, we don't sit, we go, because darkness begins to prevail. And darkness is generally a little bit scary. We are locked in our houses at night. We don't play outside in the darkness. So the analogy is given. Darkness is compared to ignorance. Ignorance began to prevail on this earthly planet. Patato Brahma Janasya Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra is like the Vedas in code form. The sake we have, when I was in the military, we were obliged to learn Morse code. Because you can't sometimes speak over the radio, or to speak nowadays over internet or television, otherwise enemies may find out your plans. So we used to use, on the battlefield, we would use Morse code. Do you understand? That means welcome. Are you having a good time? We would use Morse code. So the Vedanta Sutra, we all heard of Vedanta Sutra. Sutra means like code. The Vedanta Sutra is the Vedas in code. Veda is the vast body of works given by the Lord for human society to expedite themselves from materialistic life, to liberate themselves from the material world, to awaken our love for God and go home back to the spiritual world. But it's a vast body of knowledge. There's the four Vedas, there's the Upanishads, the Itihashas, there's the Puranas, there's the supplementary literatures like Mahabharata, like Ramayana. Who has time in Kali Yuga? We're all cramming for our exams so we can pass our university tests. We don't have time for these type of things anymore. So Lord gave Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra. That knowledge in code form. So you could just, you could get it quickly and understand. Time is short. Previous ages, they lived much, much longer than we do now. It's modern science would hardly accept that men and women lived hundreds of thousands of years, or tens of thousands of years. Or in the last age, the poor Yuga, they lived 1,000 years. Now you're lucky if you live 100 years. You're lucky. You live 100 years. So time is short. So Vedanta Sutra. Get the message quickly. Like we have, I'm traveling around the world, I always see these signs. English, intent, easy lessons. Right. But the idea is there, because time is short. So Vedanta Sutra. What is the first aphorism? What is the first shlok of Vedanta Sutra? What do our ancient rishis, our forefathers, our actual forefathers, not our seminal line of father and grandfather and great-grandfather and great-great-grandfather, but our true ancestors, the rishis, the yogis, the sadhus, what do they say? Atato brahma janashu. They're saying, now that you've come to the human form of life, now is the time for self-realization. They're speaking to us over the eons of time. It isn't that knowledge of Vedanta and Upanishad and Puranas and Itihashas and Vedas and that which is meant for our forefathers, and now we don't need it anymore. No. Recently I was giving a lecture at the University of Manipal in Karnataka near Udupi Krishna. You know, he's so cute. He's there standing with his staff and a mug butter in his hand, cowherd boy. Madhvacharya is Udupi Krishna. I went to visit him after a long time. I went to visit him 27 years ago, and I went to visit him again just to catch up, give a report on my devotional service. So I was asked to give a lecture at the University of Manipal. Many foreign students are there, and many very bright, very intelligent young people, Indian young people at the university. So we gave one lecture. There were almost 1,000 students and professors were there. And I gave a lecture for 20 or 30 minutes about Krishna consciousness, touching over and over again that this was their culture. I was an adopted son. I was an adopted boy. But this was their culture, and they should practice their culture. They shouldn't give up this very valuable culture of Krishna consciousness. This is real culture. This is eternal culture. This is the culture God has given the earth planet, not American culture and McDonald's and Halliburton and all this stuff. This is God's culture. It was embraced by the people of India, Bharatvarsha, the land of light, the land of transcendental knowledge. I said, don't give it up. Learn to balance your material and spiritual lives. So at the end, I asked the questions. And one boy stood up a bit and challenged him. He said, Swamiji, you are speaking from Bhagavad Gita. But this book was spoken 5,000 years ago. Of what value is it to our modern society? Very forceful. Swamiji, he said, what is the value of a book which was spoken 5,000 years ago? Don't you understand, Swamiji? Now we have science, we have technology, we have modern medicine, we have space travel. We're so advanced. Why do we need this book? So, you know, we got a lot of the students kind of riled up. What is this book for? I said, well, it depends what you consider the goal of life. There's two paths in this world. There's many, I remember when I was in high school,
called me and a group of teachers. So now you have to choose your career, what college you want to go to, what you're going to do for the rest of your life. I was a 17-year-old boy. I go, well, why now? I said, now I have to decide. I want to go to the beach. So, well, now you have to decide. It's difficult. But actually, there's only two paths. Only two paths. Pravritti Marg, Nivritti Marg. Pravritti Marg means the path of material enjoyment. And Nivritti Marg means the path of gradual renunciation of material life, evolving into mukti or liberation, and culminating into divine love for the Supreme Lord. That's the original constitutional position. There's two paths. We used to say when we were young, because we were raised in Christianity, you take the high road, I'll take the low road, you'll go to heaven, and I'll go to hell. There's two paths. Material life and spiritual life. Actually, we have to balance them because we are in this world. We can't be artificial. We can't run away to the forest and all the rishis. We have to find the proper balance. But now things are out of balance. Too much material and too little spiritual. So he said, what is the value of this book? I said, sir, depends what you consider the goal of life. If you consider the goal of life to be simply material comfort, and material pleasure, material progress. I said, this book is meaningless for you. Has no value to me. But if you consider that the goal of life is to awaken your divine consciousness, to know who you are, who is God, and what is your intimate loving relationship with God, I said, this book is your most valuable possession. I said, just like your forefather Gandhiji. Do not decry Gandhiji. Are you going to decry Gandhiji? Gandhiji, he used to carry this Bhagavad Gita by his side at all times. You see many photos of Gandhi. This was his book. He may not have understood it in perfection because he did not consider himself necessarily Vishnu Bhakta. But he preached the eternal wisdom of Gita to his countrymen. He understood its supreme importance, its value. Gandhiji. So what do you consider the goal of life? Material enjoyment or awakening your spiritual knowledge? So he was a little speechless. He didn't know what to say. And I quoted Vedanta Sutra. Atato Brahma Janasya. According to your forefathers. And I said, Father knows best. There was a television show when I was young. And it was about developing morals. It was a good show for us kids. You don't see shows like that on TV anymore. But it was called Father Knows Best. So our forefathers, our rishis and sadhus and sages, and our Supreme Father, God, they know what's best for us. They know what is best. They know the goal of life is self-realization. So this book, Bhagavad Gita, is as important now as it was 5,000 years ago. And similarly, it will be as important 5,000 years from now. It's always of great value, because the purpose of life is Krishna consciousness. That's the prime duty. That's the prime duty. God has given us this scripture. He says, one who studies this Shastra Gita, even now, March 24th, 2007, Krishna says, he worships me with his intelligence. And this is the point. God has given us intelligence for this purpose. This is our most valuable commodity, our most important quality, is our intelligence. No other species of life has such advanced intelligence as human beings. Even the stupidest man is more intelligent than the smartest animal. There's 8,400,000 species of life. Yes, Veda says. God says. He knows more than the scientists. What are they seeing? They're like in the little corner of the room, like an ant, a little telescope that goes 2 inches. There's so much more to this room, to this town, to this state, to this country, to this world, to this universe. What can they see with their limited mind and imperfect senses? They don't know. We have to know from God, who's the creator. If you create something, you know it inside and out. So if I want to know about it, logically I should ask you, so God is speaking in Bhagavad Gita? These are God's words. God states that He has created 8,400,000 species of life, of which the human species is just one. As Sadhu, He respects all forms of life. Vidya vinaya sampane bhamani gavi hastini sunichada sapakicha pandita samadarshanaha. A sadhu, a rishi, a yogi, he learns to give equal respect to a learned and gentle pandit, a brahmana, to a elephant, to a cow, to a dog, to a dog eater, because he realizes although the bodies are different, the souls are equal, so he respects everyone. But special emphasis is placed on the human form of life because of the intelligence. Actually, God is like a father. A father's equal to all his children. He benedicts them, he blesses them, he gives them all a different gift. So God has endowed every species of life with something a little special, a little unique. He's the father. What has he given the birds? The ability to fly. For you to fly, you have to work for a long time, put money aside, call up the travel agent, book your seat, drive to the airport, wait in a long security line. I know, because I've taken almost 21 flights in this country since I arrived a month and a half ago. Almost every day I'm flying. Long security line. Finally you get in the plane, a bird just... The fish, you want to go on vacation to the Bahamas and do some scuba diving, you have to take 6 lessons. I know I was a kid, 6 lessons. And then you can dive in shallow water. 6 more lessons, you can dive in intermediate. 21 lessons to dive in deep water with their tanks, and it's a great, this danger also. But fish? Bears, they don't have to take time off from work to sleep. They get to sleep by nature's will 6 months in the year. Right? We think we're lucky if we can sleep in 3 or 4 hours on Sunday. Not devotees, but Sunday. Devotees! Butterflies, they're always beautiful. The ladies to be beautiful, I'm sorry, ladies. The ladies to be beautiful, they think, this is what they think, this is how they think, this is what they are. Different species, no. 8,400,001. No. What do you call it? The kajal? It's more than kajal, it's all the different colors. Kajal's black, yeah, green, blue, yellow, pink, polka-dot, pink. This powder that changes the tone of the skin, and you know, this ink they put on their lips. And the dyeing of the hair, you're never satisfied. Should be a blonde, a black, a brunette, a brown. I don't know, every day I'm going to change it all the time. And you get the real picture when they wake up in the morning. We'll get the men later. We're equal to all. Pandita Samadarshana. Vidya Vinaya Sampane. We'll get their egos later. So, but butterflies, they're always beautiful. Butterflies are created by God. They're just made like that. They don't have to put on or take off the makeup. They're just always beautiful. So we are standing in line. What did we get? The 8,400,000th species of life. What did we get? We got the most important gift. Last but not least, as we say. We got buddhi. Buddhi. This is buddhi yoga. Krishna says buddhi yoga, yoga of intelligence. Intelligence means to see things in their proper perspective. You can understand if a child is intelligent, if you give a small child at a certain age, they have little experiments like that, they take a round peg and a square hole. So, and there's a round hole. There's a round hole and a square hole and a round peg. So if the child's intelligent, we're talking about 1.5 or whatever, I don't know. It's one little test they use. If he puts the round peg in the round hole, he sees things in proper perspective. And we see that people who are intelligent, they're very organized like that, they know how to use their time management. They study, they get the picture very quickly. To see things in the proper intelligence. Extreme intelligence doesn't mean that one has a very advanced IQ. It means to see the world as the Lord explains it in Bhagavad Gita. To see beyond the Maya. Maya means that which is not, beyond the illusion of this world, which keeps us bound here, birth after birth. How does the sadhu see the world? It said that a sadhu, he doesn't see through his eyes, he sees through his ears. He hears from higher authority, from guru, from saints, from God, who have a clear picture of what's actually going on, through their controlled mind and senses and their pure hearts and divine wisdom. What is the real nature of this world? Abrahma bhuvana loka punar arvitu arjuna mamopetiti kontiya punar janmana vidyate. Krishna says, from the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery, where repeated birth and death take place. Punar janmana vidyate. But one who attains to my abode, O Arjuna, never takes birth again. This is intelligence. To perceive the world in this way. Not to think that I can make some permanent settlement here and live forever and be happy. But people are thinking like that. When Yudhishthira, his brothers went out one day for hunting, and they came to one particular lake, and they were drinking the water, and it appeared that they died from drinking the water. Yudhishthira, Yudhishthira, he went looking for his brothers, and he came and he saw them all lying on the bank of the river. Oh no, my brothers, what has happened? If only I could bring you back to life. Suddenly one voice, I can bring them back to life, came from the sky. It was Dharmaraj, it was Yamaraj. He said to Yudhishthira, if you can answer the following 12 questions correctly, I will bring your brothers back to life. Was the famous set of questions that we find in the Mahabharata. The last of which was, what is the most amazing thing in this world? What would you say? Oh, the Leaning Tower of Pisa. I went on vacation. They're actually leaning like this. How they keep it up, I don't know. The Eiffel Tower. Whoa. There's so many amazing things. But he didn't answer the old wonders of the world, and of course not the new wonders of the world. What he said was, sir, the most amazing thing in this world, ahanyahani bhutani. Everyone is going to the kingdom of death. All around me, hundreds and millions of living entities are going to the kingdom of death at every moment. But I'm thinking I can stay here permanently and be happy. This is the most amazing thing. Yamaraj said, you have answered the question correct. Nakul, Sahadev, Arjun, Bhim, they came, oh, what happened? Yudhishthira said, I'll tell you later, come with me. But this is very important. We're all under the spell. We're thinking that we will be here a long time to be able to enjoy it. But time and tide wait for no man. Time and tide wait for no man. We're here just for a moment by cosmic time. Like a drop of water on a lotus flower, or when I speak in Western universities, they don't know what a lotus flower is. So I say like a drop of water in a duck's back. I like the example better. Lotus flowers in a duck's back. Anyway, but it comes, it's there for a moment and it's gone. That is our lifespan here. But we're thinking, oh, it will be here a long time. No, I'm not thinking like that, sir. Yes, we'll judge by your actions. Are you preparing yourself for the inevitable moment of death? I think this baby has to go now. Give him some milk upstairs, or a piece of burfi. Yeah. That's okay. Too much milk. We have to prepare for the inevitable. It's only natural. We're always planning for the future, aren't we? When we were young, our parents encouraged us to excel in school. Why? For in the future, we would have a good career. Every mother and father are so much concerned that their children have a good career. Because if you don't have a good career, then you won't have money and you won't be able to pay the bills and your life will be difficult. So nowadays especially, the kids are so career oriented. They're studying, 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 studying. The best years of their life, youth, are being given for the future. That's number two. Three strikes and she's out. There's some nice burpee upstairs, little one. And sweet rice and sandesh and ras malai. And gulab jamuns. Going very quickly. Only one gulab left. He's running a little bit. That could come at any moment. We have to, we're preparing for the future. Then when we finally get our graduation certificate, we get a job, we're making money, but what are we doing? We're putting a good percentage of it aside through Social Security for what? For the future. Because when you get old, can you work? After 62, 65, physically it's difficult to work and you get those senior moments where you forget the verses, you forget the work. And it's not possible to work, but you've still got a good 15 or 20 years left. So where are you going to get the money? It's taken from your paycheck throughout your working career and put in your Social Security to get it back. So we're always concerned. What? We're always concerned about the future, aren't we? We're practically living in the future. We're not happy now. We're thinking, oh, if I just get that girl, if I just get that boy, if I just land that job, if I can just build that house, if I can just get this trip here, then I'll be happy. We're not happy now. We're thinking in the future I'll be happy, because all our plans are materialistic and they don't touch the real thing, the soul. Only on the spiritual platform do you find real satisfaction. Trying to satisfy these senses is like pouring kerosene in a fire. It doesn't extinguish it, it only makes it greater. So the longer we live in this world, our desires become stronger and stronger and stronger. We're not happy. So we're living in the future. We're always thinking, tomorrow will be a better day. We're thinking like that. But unfortunately, we don't know that the future means eternity. One day we're going to have to die. And everything we've worked for, we're going to have to leave it behind. You cannot take a single penny with you. That may be just around the corner. And where are you going to go? Where are you going to go? Well, I learned in biology class I don't go anywhere. I just cease to exist. This is the dichotomy of this country. It's a very strong Christian country. They believe in eternity. But in their schools, they're teaching Darwinian theory of evolution, which is atheistic. There's no life after death. There's no God in control. It's all controlled by mechanistic creation. Laws of mechanics. It's ironic, actually. People are thinking that there's no life after death. They're not making any preparation. At least we in our Vedic culture, we know there's life after death, but we're not making any plans. This is even worse. It's one thing if you don't know it's wrong and you do it. It's another thing if you know it's wrong and you do it. There's two different things. So we know in our Vedic culture, Dehino swinyatarehe, kovanam yovanam jara, tatatiyantaras faktir, dhirasthatanamunyanti. Every little kid in India, at least in the old days, now they're singing Britney Spears, but at least when I was young, when I first went to India, the boys were singing these verses. As the embodied soul continually passes from the body of a baby to a boy, to a youth, to an old man, the soul passes into another body at death. This is not outdated knowledge, I'm sorry. It is not outdated. It was spoken 5,000 years ago. It's not outdated. These are laws of nature. This is not religious dogma. This is not just philosophy. These are the facts of life. This is the mechanics of this world. That the living entity is situated in this body, and the body is constantly in flux, constantly changing. One thing remains the same, the soul. When I was preparing for college, I was going into medical college from the very beginning, and we learned that every 7 years, all the cells in the body change. That's science. That means every 7 years, you have a new body. If you're 21, you've had 3 bodies. If you live to be a ripe old man or woman, from this point on, you're going to change your body so many times. Even as you've been sitting here, billions and billions and billions of cells have died and been replaced with new ones. You don't even have the same body now that you walk into this house with. It's all changing. It's in flux. That's the nature of this world. But the soul is remaining unaffected. You have survived the change of so many bodies. You will survive the change of the final body. And where will you go? You don't know. You can't stand up and tell me, yes, sir, I am going here. If you don't know that, then we have to classify ourselves as fools. If you don't know. Like you're going on vacation, and you get in the car, you pack the car, you get in the car, and all the kids are all really excited. The wife says, whoa, finally a vacation. And they turn to say, where are we going on vacation? And you go, I haven't got a clue. Hello, Dad. You're what? Daddy. Where are we going? I don't know, we're just going to go someplace. What? When we laugh, but we're laughing at our own selves. Because can you stand up right now and tell me where you're going to go at the moment of death? If you can't tell me approximately where you're going, it's not something to laugh, it's something to cry. We were taking lunch and I said something and one boy started, I didn't know if he was laughing or crying. Sometimes it's hard to distinguish, you're laughing or crying. We can laugh if we know where I'm going, but we should cry if we don't know where we're going. And we will go somewhere. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tiyatityanta kalevaram, Krishna says, whatever mentality you have at the moment of death, that will determine your next state of being. In other words, your desires will take you to your next body. Desire. It's like we're all in this room in a couple hours, we're all going to go we're going to leave, we're all going to go to the same place, we're all going to go to one home and go to sleep. That would be weird. We're going to go to the restaurant. Well, probably not the restaurant because we'll have a nice feast here. We're going to go to the store to pick up something there. We're going to go to get the mail. We're going to visit a friend. Why didn't you come to the program? We're going to go here. We're going to go to somebody because we have different desires. So the moment of death means you have 8,400,000 choices. Not choices, but destinations. It's not what you can choose. When you finish school, the final day of school, you don't choose the university. You go to the university depending on the grades you got. So what you've done with your life, how you've utilized this life, if you've taken advantage of it, used it or abused it, will determine your next birth. And you should be concerned because it's your future. And you're so concerned with your future. If you're living in some apartment complex, you know, near the nearest town, and the city decides they're going to tear it down and build one big mall there, they'll give you 6 months notice. And then what do? You start going to the newspaper. Okay, so, you know, it's tough luck, you know. You have to build it here, and you go and you find an appropriate apartment. You call up, you know, in 5 months, I'd like to move there. And I put a down payment on the apartment now and start moving my furniture over. Slowly, okay. And by the time 6 months, you know, that you see the bulldozers on the horizon, you just, okay, take your last bag out of the house and move in here. But somebody who doesn't make any plans for being kicked out, it's a very fearful situation. The bulldozers come, hey, wait a minute! And we gave you notice. No, stop! Stop! Stop the bulldozers! Oh, sir. Time and tide wait for no man. That's the position of most people in this world. They don't have a vision of eternity. or they think foolishly they can stop death. I was just reading a scientific journal tonight to keep up on what they're saying these days. It's kind of like old wine and new bottle, different types of atheism. But they actually said that within this coming century, they were saying, the scientists say, first we will conquer all diseases. I said, really? Then we will conquer old age. And he said, I think that by the end of the century, we will make man immortal. Oh my God. I said, do you think you're going to live long enough to see it? But it reminded me of a story that Prabhupada, the spiritual master, said. He said once there was a sculptor. He could sculpt things very nicely. So exactly. A little chorus of babies here screaming. He went to an astrologer, which is a proper Vedic science, and at least it used to be. And he asked the astrologer, you know, what about the future? And then he said, when will I die? And generally astrologers, they don't tell you when you're going to die. They can see it. The Makkah, they can see that inauspicious period that comes up at some point, and probably you'll die. They don't tell you because most people are not ready to hear such a thing. They're not prepared for it. But he told this sculptor, you're going to die next year, May 22nd at 12 noon. Oh. He went home and he started thinking about it, and it was on his mind. It's kind of troubling him. And then he said, no, I'm not going to let Yamaraj take me. No way! I'm too smart. I'm going to trick Yamaraj. I'm going to trick death. So you know what he did? As the month of April came, April showers bring May flowers, but for him it meant he was going 6 feet under. Flowers were going to grow on his grave. What he did is he began sculpting different images of himself. He was so expert. You know, we call these dioramas. We give him that credit. He was so good, you couldn't tell the difference between him and any one of his sculptings. He was so good. He had them in different positions. One was like this, one was like this, one was talking, one was lying down. He had 9 dioramas of himself. So what happened is, you know, May 22nd came, and it was 10 o'clock in the morning, and he was laughing. What a cheap death. And then, you know, 11:45, and then 11:50, 11:55, 56, 57, 58, 59. He froze in the room with all the other 9 images of himself. He froze. And suddenly, Yamaraj. You don't think he's some fictitious character, some modern cartoon hero like Spider-Man or something like that. No. Great sages like Srila Vyasadeva speak extensively of such divine personalities. These are great sages, full control of the mind and senses, seers of the truth. They're not wasting their time writing these things down in Vedic scriptures. They're giving us the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So help me God. Yamaraj appeared. Where is he? He's a busy man. Anyahani Bhutani. He's every moment millions of living entities are going to the kingdom of death, so he's a very busy man. He doesn't have time to waste. But for a moment, it appears like he couldn't figure out which is the real sculptor that I've come to take. He couldn't figure out my conscience. This one's gonna happen. I have to go. What's happening? What's going on here? What's happening? So inside, that sculptor was laughing. Ha! I cheated death! I am immortal! Like Hiranyakashipu. Of course he wasn't saying it, but inside, he was just bubbling over with joy. I have conquered death. But Yamaraj is no fool. He's one of the 12 Mahajans, as we say in our Gaudiya tradition. He's one of the 12 authorities in the science of Krishna consciousness. We have our authorities. Prabhupada said, this Krishna conscious movement is authorized. It's time tested and proved. If you follow this path, then now or in the future, you will get liberation. You will get Bhagavad Gita, no doubt. We have so many examples. Bhagavad Gita Parijita, you judge a thing by the result. So Yamaraj is one of our authorities in the science of Krishna consciousness, the science of bhakti. And being a great authority, he's very intelligent. So he said, enough of this nonsense, he said. So he spoke out loud. Look at this artwork. It's really shabby. There's so many faults. It's just, I don't know who in the world put these dioramas together. He's really poor, second-class artist. I mean, look, the hair there is not exactly in proportion, so the color in the left ear is obviously off. And the leg there is 2 centimeters too long, and this is disgusting. And the potter spoke up. What do you mean? I'm known as one of the best artists. And Yamar said, in hell. Come with me, sir. So no. But if you know where you're going, if you're prepared, as we say in the Boy Scouts, I don't know if... Anyway, I was a Boy Scout. I was an Eagle Scout. Be prepared. So part of our life, we have to prepare ourselves for the inevitable future. And we can't be like ostriches and just stick our head in the ground. Preparation means study of the Veda. Putting the knowledge into practice. And that in this age, what does that mean? It's been made simple for people of this age. It's been made simple because there's some concession made. Understanding our fallen condition spiritually, the Lord has made a special concession for the souls of Kali Yuga. Harinama Harinam Harinam Eva Kevalam Kulo Nastiva 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 Gatir Anithar. This is Brihat Narayan Purana. Purana means ancient knowledge. This verse was given hundreds of thousands, millions of years ago. Then in the age of Kali, before the age of Kali came, in the age of Kali it is said, the most easiest and sublime means of becoming self-realized, of becoming God-conscious, of awakening your love for Bhagavan, it's very simple. Nashteva, nashteva, nashteva. Not by bhukti, not by any material formula can you become God-conscious. Can you obtain the kingdom of God? Ravana, the great Asura who stole Sita from Ram to Lanka, he tried to build a staircase to heaven. He was so foolish. He tried to build a staircase to heaven. Oh. Not by any material, mechanical means. Nashteva, nashteva, nashteva. Not by bhukti, not by any material means, not by jnana, not just by study. Not anymore. Not by yoga. Maybe you can get a little free from stress, okay. You can get some peace of mind, okay. But in that peace of mind, then you must think of something spiritual. So there's some advantage there. But nashteva, nashteva, nashteva. Not by any, then by what? Kalir dosha nidhe rajan asti eka mahaguna. Kirtanareva krishnasya mukta sangha padamabhaja. Hey king, Shukdev Goswami is telling Maharaj Parikshit, who was cursed by a Brahmin boy to die in 7 days in the great Bhagavad Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. He left his kingdom, took off his royal dress, put on a loincloth, went down to the Ganges to inquire what is the duty of one who's about to die. His guru came by providence, by God's grace, his guru came and said, hey, king. Kalir dosha nidhe rajan. Hey, king, this age which you've taking your birth in, it's just beginning. It's an ocean of inauspiciousness. But kirtanadeva krishnasya mukta sangha padam, there's one good thing left in this age. What do you mean? There's so many nice things. Look at New York, the Big Apple. It's a great city. Saks Fifth Avenue. Wow. La Gay Party. Voila, Monsieur Madame. No. It's all temporary. In time it will all fade. What then is the what is the wonderful thing? What is the one good thing left in this? Kirtana Deva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha. By chanting the names of God, one can achieve perfection. Oh. Who? Anyone and everyone. And no one is considered qualified, no one is considered unqualified. Everyone is a candidate for liberation, everyone is a candidate for devotional service, everyone is a candidate for going back to the same kingdom of God that those persons who lived in Satya, Treta, Dipura aspired for. Although we're very fallen, we have the same golden opportunity by the mercy of the most recent incarnation of God, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna Varnam Tisha Krishnam Shango Panga Shaparshadam Yad Nai Shankitan Payar Yashantihi Shu Medashaha. The same Lord who appeared at the end of the Dipura Yuga and spoke this verse this evening. Bluish black like the monsoon cloud. Tribanga Sundhara. Sham Sundar Krishna lives in Vrindavan with his most beloved consort, Srimati Radharani, and the gopis and the cowherd boys and Nanda Baba and Jashoda. That same Lord who appeared 5,000 years ago, oh, he's appeared again. Recently, he's appeared again. 500 years ago, again in India. Why not New York? Because Bharatvarsha means the land of the pious. Those persons who were most pious in their previous lives, they take birth in India. Therefore, Kaviraj Goswami says, and thus, it's their responsibility to learn their culture, not abandon their culture for American materialism, but to learn their eternal culture and share it with the rest of the world. India will be greatly, highly respected for that in the future, not for its IT technology. No, it will not be respected for that. It will be respected for the fact that it's the most glorious spiritual culture on this planet. Nothing compares, with all due respect, to other spiritual traditions, because they also come from God. They also have their time, place, and circumstance. But outside of India, who can explain who is God? If you stop a man or woman on the street, sir, are you religious? Oh, very. Do you believe in God? I believe in God. Who is God? Well, he's God. No, who is God? Well, he's there. Who is God? But in India, we know. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Adhir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. Vedas are full of so much detail about the Lord. And without that knowledge, how you can love God? We speak about love of God, but if you don't know someone, how you can love them? It's just logic. People aren't even logical anymore. Everything's become illogical. Not even logic left, for the sake of transcendental knowledge. Not even logical. If I tell you, oh, I have a friend. Hey, I love this friend. Oh, he's just like my best buddy. I love him. I just really love him. Wow. Where does he live? No. Okay, well, what's he look like? Can't tell you. What's his name? I haven't got a clue. What is the impetus for love? Why did you choose your husband as your lifetime partner? Well, there's so many men, there's so many girls, but you know, you chose that person, I was going to say sitting next to you, sitting on the opposite side of the hall. Why? Because of the way they look, their particular interests in life, they had likes and dislikes, that you also have the same likes and dislikes, more or less. The way they walk, things they like to eat, their Krishna consciousness, yes, that's the main thing. Of course, he's also very handsome. That had nothing to do with it. But, you know, soul, birds of a feather flock together. There was a detail about that that is a sign of love. when we're worshiping the deity, we express our love for the deity by all the detail. So, boom, the curtain opens. Govindam, Adi Purusham, Tama. Just look at the flower there, Krishna's hair, that little jewel there. Detail is a sign of love. So, the Vedic scriptures are full of so much detail about the name, fame, form, paraphernalia, pastimes, abode of God. There's no dearth of information. As much as you want to know about God, you can understand from Vedic scriptures, beginning with Bhagavad Gita, going through the Srimad Bhagavatam, and you could say culminating in the great Chaitanya Charitamrita, which goes in the different rasas or metals of love that one can experience. An ocean of love one can experience in associating with the personality of Godhead. That is the India. That is the beauty of India. That is the gift that we have to offer the world. We should learn this culture. We should learn this culture and share it with the entire world. Give people the opportunity. Oh, but they will say, this is an Indian culture. This is not Indian culture. Golok Premdan Harinam Sankirtan. This is not an Indian movement. This is not Indian culture. Golok Premdan Harinam Sankirtan. This is a spiritual movement. It has no dimensions, north, south, east, or west. It is coming from the spiritual sky. We are introducing people to the spiritual world. It's like a window to the spiritual world. This is how people live eternally in the spiritual sky. People should be captivated because this is their original divine nature. And we should help them attain that by sharing this divine wisdom. First, we should practice it ourselves, become fixed up, and then share it with the whole world. It is not east or west or north or south. It is something completely transcendental. And recently I was in California. I also spoke to a group of students there. And they said, but this is something so foreign to us. I said, no, sir. This America is foreign to you. Jivarastu Poya Krishna Nitya Das. You're an eternal servant of Krishna. You just don't know it now. But if you practice, if you chant, you will understand. So, but America, we want American things. I said, what's America? America's a hodgepodge of a million countries. That we can say that openly because, you know, there's the Statue of Liberty, opening your arms to the whole, the suffering, the depressed, the, you know, oppressed. There, come, America is just such a mixture of the world. What's American? And anyway, Americans love pizza. Imagine if Bush passed a law, no more pizza in America because it's Italian. No more medicine invented by the French. Oh, no. Even if something comes from another culture, if it's good, makes you better, healthy, better person, take it. So this will make you the best of all persons, Krishna conscious culture, so we should take it. Take advantage. It's a very simple process. It's even more simple than it was in the previous ages, and people were more qualified. All we have to do is the Yuga Dharma. Chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You have to chant, but you also have to lead a pure life. If you have a pure goal in life, then what person really wouldn't want to say that, okay, I understand from the lecture, I'm not of this world, I'm a stranger in a strange land. I want to go back to my original nature in the spiritual world. Well, it's a very pure existence there. So if you want to go back to the spiritual world, you have to live a pure existence. And pure existence means, according to Vedic culture, no meat eating, no fish, no eggs, even worse, no onion, no garlic. I'm not worse, but no intoxication, no sex outside of marriage, no gambling. How is that possible? They're always telling me. Well, I like to lecture on the street. It's my favorite place. Violence right down on the street. Give them the absolute truth. Yeah, they're saying, wow, yeah. And we have this perfect philosophy. So wonderful to establish it. They always say, how is it possible? I say, well, Chanaka Panda says in Nitya Shastra. Have you ever heard of Nitya Shastra? Is that part of the Bible? Exactly. Chanaka Panda says you literally give up something, you get something better. So this strong discipline, which is the foundation of any bona fide spiritual tradition and part of our Vedic culture, this clean, pure way of life, it's only possible to give up the bad habits if you're getting something better. And what are you getting better? You're getting a taste for transcendence when you chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. That's the Paramdrishti Nirvantami. That's how we get the higher taste. It gives us the faith to keep going on in spiritual life. Renounce all that is unnecessary for spiritual life and keep making advancement out of this world of birth and death, back to the spiritual world, back to the kingdom of God. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.